Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. My name is Marty Plum, and I am your host of a Pen and a Napkin podcast, a weekly coaching clinic you can carry around with you in your pocket. Welcome back to our interview series, episode number 263. And on the other line, I have Dave Severance right now. He is a scout for the Indiana Pacers, but he's been with the Pacers. He's been with the Clippers. He's been with the Bulls. He's done a lot of great things, and Coach will tell us about that here in just a little bit. But before we get going with Coach here, we, of course, want to thank our founding sponsor, Cosac Chiropractic, located at 144th and Maple here in Omaha. Coaches, if you have an athlete who is struggling with balanced neck or spinal issues, have them go see Cosac Chiropractic. Check out their practice at cosacchiro.com. Follow us on A Pen and a Napkin on Twitter or X or whatever you want to call it. We try to put out daily coaching tidbits on the Twitter handle, so be sure to follow us there. If you're listening, please subscribe. Give us a five-star review on iTunes, Spotify, whatever it may be. It helps us out when coaches look up coaching basketball podcasts on the Google machine. If you do that, the higher up we are, the easier it is for folks to find us. And it's just a circular thing that just keeps going and going. So please be sure to do that. Questions, comments, suggestions, or ideas, email me apenandanapkin@gmail.com. Dave Severance with the Indiana Pacers. Coach, it is a privilege and an honor to have you on here this week for our interview series.
Your podcast, and I'm happy to join you.
Perfect. Well, Coach, let's just get going here. Let's just kind of get it started the way we normally get it started. Excuse me. I actually had to talk in school today. I've got a student teacher right now, so my pipes have rested a little bit here these last couple of weeks, and I gotta get back into shape. And I actually had to talk for three periods today, so I'm kind of recovering here, coming off the injured reserve. So, Coach, tell us a little bit about yourself, about your basketball journey, and what you've been doing the last few decades in the game.
Look, I started out as a young, after my playing career in college, I was a very, very average Division II player. And then right away, started coaching, had an opportunity to start coaching the ninth grade boys team in California with absolutely zero coaching experience. And it was, it was a nightmare. I had no idea what I was doing, but I loved it. Started off as a ninth grade coach and then just kind of worked my way up, junior varsity, varsity. All told, I was in high school for 15 years. As a high school teacher and a coach for 15 years. And then, just kind of worked my way up from there as an assistant junior college coach, an assistant in Division II for a year, a Division I, video coordinator. They had a, that was when video coordinators were pretty brand new. Mm-hmm. I did that for 3 years at the Division I level, and spent several years in player development before I got my chance to coach in the NBA. And I think this is my 15th or 16th year in the NBA, either as an assistant coach or player development coach, and now as a scout. So
gotcha. Gotcha.
It's been a lot of different levels.
You bet. Our newest category to the podcast here, the Karen Self, a Pen and a Napkin moment. Coach, when do you remember it was the first time that you just started drawing the X's and O's and bringing that out? Mm-hmm. Whether it's on a piece of paper or a napkin or whatever it may be. When do you remember that?
I remember. The young coach. I realized I didn't know anything. So hey, this was back in the day before Zoom and before all this stuff and the videos and everything, when coaches clinics were really, really popular.
Yep.
Where, in-person coaches clinics. And I remember my first coaching clinic that I ever went to, I believe it was 80. And a Converse used to have these things called the Medalist Clinics.
Okay.
All over the country. And I remember going to my very first coach in San Jose, California. I remember driving down there. And, Coach Knight was the feature speaker. Him along with like Coach Ravling and a few other coaches from the 80s. But I remember specifically Coach Knight Being the feature speaker at my first coaching clinic ever. And just, you know, this is back before we had videos, and, you know, the coaches would literally be up there with an overhead projector, you know, and putting stuff on the overhead projector, X and an O, and then going through, you know, many, many different, you know, pages of that. And I just remember taking notes at that very first coaching clinic back, you know, 45 years ago or wherever it was. And ever since then, I've really been hooked on going to clinics and coach clinics. And I've been doing it now ever since. Whenever I get a chance to go to a clinic to learn and to X and O and to, you know, philosophy and all that different stuff, I try to take advantage of that.
Yeah. You have one of the best Twitter handles ever, and we talked to, and truth be told, folks, I'm working on another project, and that's how Coach Severance and I hooked up just a few days ago, and we've got a mutual interest. We'll leave that as a tease. How about that, Dave? We'll leave that as a tease here. And we started talking Twitter handles and different things like that. And Coach told me the story, but I would love for the public to hear the story. If you aren't on Coach's Twitter handle, and it's just at Dave Severance, or Dave underscore Severance, he has the hoop of the day, and it's a fascinating thing to see that. And so Coach, kind of tell the story of how you came about the hoop of the day.
That's my one contribution to social media, to be honest with you, and that's about it. But it was probably 7 or 8 years ago, and I was my daughter, my oldest daughter, Darcy, and we were, driving around somewhere, and there was a really cool hoop, and she goes, you know, we ought to take a picture of that. And I took a picture of it, and she goes, you know, that was actually her idea. She said, we should, you know, you should start this. It was Twitter, Danny. She said, you start this thing on Twitter, you know, and we'll call it the hoop of the day instead of like soup of the day. Yeah. And I didn't even know how to set up a Twitter account. But she showed me how to do it. And it just kind of started very simply from that one picture. And I can't remember how long ago it was, probably 8 years ago. Mm-hmm. And it's just something that I kind of started doing every day. You know, first thing in the morning when I wake up, that's what I do. And It's amazing how many people have commented to me. I thought there'd be like five people that followed it, you know. it's amazing how, you know, wherever I go, people will always make a comment. Hey, you do the hoop of the day. I got one for you. You know, well, send it to me and, you know, put it on. So
yeah.
Any of your listeners have a hoop of the day, send it to me, throw it on there and give them credit.
What was maybe the I don't know, what were some memorable ones? I guess the memorable is the word I will use, Dave. How about that?
Yeah. Well, it's been literally on my computer, thousands of them. But there was one, somebody sent me a picture of a basketball court inside of a cave in China. I mean, a giant cave.
Wow.
And I don't know what the cave was for, but you know how obsessed the Chinese are with basketball, but they had built a basketball court inside this cave. And I don't know if the cave was for the workers or for minerals or whatever they were doing in there, but they had a court in there, and that was pretty interesting. But off the top of my head, that's one that I remember the most.
A hoop inside of a cave, that would be a tough one. That would be a tough one to match. Without a doubt, that would be a tough one to match. So, your role in the game has changed, Coach. You know, you started at the high school level, did this and that, and we'll talk more about you know, your player development, skill development a little bit later on. But now you've kind of evolved. You're serving in this role as a scout. And it's a unique job, without a doubt. You know, what got you interested into being a scout, and kind of just take us behind the curtain, you know, at the highest professional level in the world, in the NBA, and you're working for one of those teams as a scout, and just tell us what it's all about.
Well, it's a really cool job, and I don't even look at it as a job.
Mm-hmm.
Go number one to practices, you know, especially in the month of October. You know, I'm doing college scouting now. I used to do pro personnel where you can't go to practices, but in college, you can go to practices, which I really enjoy. So especially, like I said, in the early months before they start playing games, but once they start playing games, you know, you're going to games. You're trying to go to as many practices as you can. You're talking to the coaches and, you know, the people who work in the program, just trying to find out as much as you can about the players that you're looking at. And I find it to be just a great job. I'm continually learning about the game and trying to keep on top of the trends and the way the game changes, in addition to, you know, my primary job, which is to scout players and find out as much as we can about the players that are to be drafted. Now, when I did pro personnel, it was different because, you know, you're going to all, you know, the pro games, and you're not getting to go to any practices, but you do go to a lot of games, and
mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's pretty cool because, you know, they're paying you to go watch NBA basketball,
mm-hmm.
which is pretty cool. You know, there is some travel involved. That's probably, you know, if there is a downside, which I don't think there is because I really love traveling. But, you know, you do travel a lot. And if you have a family like I do, even though my kids are older now, I've got a couple of grandkids. So it can take you away from your family. But, you know, it's also just, you know, pretty much during the season. So mm-hmm. once the season's over, you know, you do have some responsibilities in the off season, but the travel isn't as bad as it is during the season. And if you ever thought about, you know, getting into this crazy world of basketball, either coaching or scouting, you better have a supportive family mm-hmm. who understands, you know, the demands of the job, as I'm sure you know.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. At any level, it's a crazy demand, you know. You know, with your job, and I don't want to give, I don't want you to talk about that, anything that you're not comfortable with in that regard, Coach. But, you know, with the Pacers, do you kind of say, hey, I saw this kid at such and such school, I think we should check him out? Or do they say, you know, Dave, you're going here to watch, you know, West Texas against East Mississippi or that type of thing? You know, how does that part of it work?
It's a combination.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a combination of both. You know, we collaborate in the off season, you know, and generate, you know, a list of players we think we should be on top of for the coming year. And then in addition to that, you know, there's, you know, through my connections, my contacts, if there's somebody that I hear about or somebody that I see that I think we need to include, then we'll do that. So it's a collaboration of both. And, you know, we try to just, you know, and every team does it this way. You know, they just try to cover all the bases and fill the holes
mm-hmm.
and make sure nobody slips through the cracks. So it's really a combination of both those things.
Mm-hmm. How much input do you hear from, in the sense of the GM or maybe even the coaching staff, in the sense of, hey, we really think we're going to need a point guard next year, you know, that type of thing? Or, man, we, you know, looking ahead, we need a rim running big who can pick and roll to the basket hard and catch lobs because we got Halliburton, or, you know, whatever the situation may be.
Yeah, there's always input, you know, from the coaching staff as far as, you know, how they'd like to see the team built.
Mm-hmm.
But you also, you know, have to understand your coach and your roster and be able to build the team out, you know, according to how you want to play. You know, and some coaching staffs around the league are really involved with the draft.
Mm-hmm.
And some are not, because they're so busy during the year that they really don't have time. They don't have time to, you know, to scout players and really dig into the draft until after their season's over. So some staffs are more involved than others. Some head coaches stay out of it.
Yeah.
You know, and just you guys do your job, pick the best player. And then some coaches, head coaches are more involved with the draft.
Mm-hmm. Coaches, I am really excited to announce this year's lineup for our 5th annual Pen and a Napkin Coaches Clinic. This year's clinic date is Saturday, April the 12th. It's going to take place at Mary R. Queen Gymnasium, located at 3405 South 119th Street here in Omaha. We've got 3 on-court demonstrators. Andy King, the head boys basketball coach at Elkhorn North High School, will get the day started with his clinic on developing your team through 5-on-5 controlled scrimmages. Jody Steyer, my good friend from Iowa State University, the associate head coach at Iowa State with the women's basketball team, is going to talk about individual player development in small group settings. Jamie Smith, the head girls basketball coach at Solon High School in Iowa, one of the best I've ever seen, teach about shooting fundamentals, is going to talk to us about how to put together a great shooting workout for your players. Coach Smith won a state championship last year at the Class 3A level in Iowa. Those are 3 on-court demonstrators. Then we're going to have 3 off-court demonstrators. Our lunch keynote speaker is my guy Raz Vanderloo, the head boys basketball coach at Sioux City East High School. And also Raz is very involved with USA Basketball. I'm just going to let Raz cook. He's going to talk to us just with a basketball smorgasbord of topics about what Raz wants to talk about that day. Then we're going to have 2 smaller breakout sessions. Lucas Dollinghouse, the head boys basketball coach at Johnson Brock here in high school, highly successful program. He's also an administrator, and he's going to talk about coaching through an administrator's eyes along with some other things. Our other breakout session is Weekday Wade Coulter, the head girls basketball coach at Gretna East High School, and he's going to talk about building a pressure defensive system. One of the great things about the Pen and a Napkin Clinic is, in addition to our presenters, we also have 2 designated breakout sessions where you will get the opportunity to discuss various topics with other coaches attending the clinic. These sessions are a great way to pick the brains of your peers at the clinic, and it's one of the most enjoyable points of our annual clinic. And then, hey, after a long day of learning about hoops, it's time to kick back and relax. We're going to have an optional post-clinic social at Wine 121. It's right down the street from Mary R. Queen, about a mile and a half down the road. I want to thank my friend TK, Tom Crable, for opening his doors to the clinic again. It's just $15 per coach for anybody that wants to join us there. Our Pen and a Napkin Clinic is one of the most affordable clinics in America. I mean, it is really, really, really affordable. You're going to get over 7 hours worth of information. That's $60 for a coach. If you're just a singular coach that wants to come up and check it out, it's $60 a coach. If you bring yourself and another coach from your staff, it's $110. 3 coaches from your staff, $150. If you bring 4 or more coaches from your staff, it is only $45 per coach. We've got a sliding scale. It's all about getting better at an affordable price. So if you are interested in signing up for our Pen and a Napkin Clinic, look to the flyer on Twitter and mail it in. You can scan it in. You can do all those different things, or you can DM me on Twitter, or you can email me apenandanapkin@gmail.com. Registrations are due by Thursday, April the 10th, 2025. Coaches, do not miss out on one of the best coaching clinics in America. You get the privilege of, you know, again, kind of going around seeing all these players. And as, like you said, as a college scout, you get to go to all of these practices and mingle and mix and watch all these different styles. I mean, it's just great. I mean, I get to do that at the high school level, but you're taking it up another notch, Dave. You know, what in the last few months here, so in this season, what are some of the really, really good things that you've seen in coaching this year? If there's any individual things that kind of stick out that, boy, I really like the way Coach Johnson does this, or Coach Flanders does that, or whatever it may be.
Yeah, it's really cool to go to the practice, but going to a University of Houston practice, I mean, if you're a young coach, if you're an old coach and you ever get a chance to go to a University of Houston practice, I would I would really recommend doing it. I mean, the way he runs his program and the practices is, to me, it's old school, but it's new school. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you've ever had a chance to watch his team play, I'm sure most of your listeners have, it's pretty amazing. But to see how they practice to prepare themselves to play that way is even better. So that's really cool. And then, there's no right or wrong way to do it. And, his way is his way.
Yeah.
And he doesn't deviate from it, and he doesn't apologize for it. And I tell you what, nobody gets their kids to play harder than he does.
Sure. Oh, yeah.
And then just to see, the different, I've been to practices where the approach is, 180 degrees and opposite, but mm-hmm. the results can be just as effective.
Mm-hmm.
So just having the chance to see the different ways that the coaches go about, preparing their team for the season, and it's really cool.
Yeah. Can you give us any examples of how Coach Sampson, combines that old school approach with the new school approach?
Let me tell you, he don't play. He doesn't care about your feelings. He's going to do it his way, and he's going to be very demanding. And if you can't handle it, if you're not tough enough, then you're not for him.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just the way it's going to be. And he does as good a job of anybody as getting his players mentally prepared for the season.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing that the attention to the detail, especially defensively. I mean, his practices. I mean, he's. I go to some practices where they just kind of let him go and they don't stop and correct it. He's on top of everything, and he's constantly stopping and correcting and teaching and getting in their ass and, when it's appropriate. And it's really good. Now, he's not the only one that does it that way.
Correct.
But in my mind, he's probably the best one that does it that way.
Mm-hmm.
Mick Cronin is very similar at UCLA, the way he approaches his practices and his team, and you can see it in the way they play.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, they both of those programs, and Mick was like that at Cincinnati, and he's kind of carried that out to UCLA. Just, we're going to D you up. We're going to get down, whether we're going to pick you up at 94 feet or 25 feet, but we are going to be physical with you. You are not going to get second shots. Our first shot is probably not our best shot. We're looking for the second and third shot, that type of thing. Buzz Williams kind of does the same thing at Texas A&M. I think that's that lineage there.
A couple of his practices too, and he's very much the same way. Mm-hmm.
So yeah. You have, as we say here on A Pen and a Napkin, Coach, we are seasoned and experienced in what we do. Well, I'm trying to use that O word in a nicer fashion, a more flattering way. You've been fortunately, you say you've had a tremendous career, and you're still doing great things with it. But a lot of that, and when you're a scout, when you're a whether it's college scout, pro scout, whether you're working with players or whatever, different things like that, whatever it may be, to go up through the ranks like you have, from starting out as a freshman coach to the places you've been able to go to and work with, and the players you've been able to work with, you have to be able to network, and I think that. I mean, networking today is different than what it was when you and I were getting going in this field. But how do you build that? What are some really big keys? And again, I think, today it's kind of a combination of the old school and the new school, so to speak. But in your estimation of what you've seen and how the game has evolved since you've gotten involved with it, how has networking evolved, and what are the keys to building a really, really solid, genuine network?
and I don't refer to it as networking. I know what you mean. I just call it relationship building.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and when we started off as young coaches, you know, you had to go and work camps. You had to go to and attend clinics to be able to develop your relationships. Because we didn't have all the technological ways that people can do that now. So it all starts with, you know, getting out and developing relationships by working camps, going to coaching clinics. And you know, one of the things that I've found throughout the years is you got to return phone calls.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if a person that I have a true relationship with won't get back to me within 24 hours, then it's probably not a true relationship.
Mm-hmm.
I try to have that rule with all the people that I have relationships with in the game. If somebody reaches out by a text or a call and I'm not available, I'm going to get back to them within 24 hours. I think that's just a common courtesy that you have to have as you're looking to build relationships in coaching and anything. So I think that's an important part of it. And, you know, being honest, being genuine, being there for your buddies when you need them. Because in coaching, you know, there's a lot of ups and downs. You're going to get fired. You know, you're going to have parents pissed at you. You're going to have principals and ADs and general managers and things like that are going to, you're going to have problems with throughout your career. And you got to have a relationship tree of people that you can go to and talk to.
Mm-hmm.
I call them 3 a.m. guys.
Love it.
You know, I got a list of 3 a.m. guys and that I know at any time, you know, when it hits the fan and I need somebody to talk to, I can pick up the phone and call those guys. That's an important part of relationship building is your 3 a.m. guys. And then all, you know, you have the peripheral relationships that you need too. You know, if you're a college coach when it comes to recruiting and parents, you know, if you're a high school coach, you know, it may be, you know, building your schedule, your summer leagues, all that stuff, your camps, that you need to be able to have a good network of relationships that you can go to. And it's everything in basketball and sports in general.
Yeah.
None of us got here on our own. And none of us is gonna get to where we want to be on our own. It's all about the relationships that you develop with people along the way. And we've all seen it in coaching where it's cost, you know, having bad relationships has cost people.
Yeah.
The ability to move up in this game or to keep a job. You know, there's a lot more jobs, you know, or more people are eliminated from jobs by poor relationships than they are anything else.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I mean, absolutely. You know, I've had on more than one occasion somebody who didn't list me as a reference, but they applied for a job. And somebody who I know who's, you know, whether, let's say it doesn't even have to be like the activities director, but it's a boys basketball coach at such and such school. And they'll say, hey, you know, Dave Severin's applied for this job. We don't know much about him. Do you know him? What do you think of him? You know, that type of a thing. And and one thing I've really learned, Dave, is you never know who's watching you at any time.
And, you know, Marty, I try to impress, when I speak to young players and young kids, you know, that's one of the first things I tell them. You never know who's watching.
Mm-hmm.
Man, you don't know me. I'm some old white guy sitting over there in the gym watching. You have no idea who I am. And it's that way. You know, every day's a job.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of the way you got to approach it.
Mm-hmm.
That's just kind of the way it is. Relationships are everything in our game. It truly is. And I've been fortunate to have some great relationships with people. For example, if you're a high school coach, you take a job at a high school, say you're a new coach at the high school. Well, who are the people that you need to build positive relationships with right away? That, you know, number one is the janitor.
Mm, yep.
You know, the the staff around the school, you know, the people that really can help you and that are going to tell you the truth about what's going on and what's going on in the past. Because so many people, let's be honest, so many people in our game lie.
Mm-hmm.
They don't tell the truth.
Yep.
And you got to find those people who can help you and be honest with you and really give you the lay of the land, you know, when you're starting a new job. Like if you're a college coach, you know, and you're going into a new situation in college, you know, you need to find out who the influential people are in that, you know, whether it's a booster or an athletic administrator, and you need to build good, solid, honest relationships with those people.
Mm-hmm.
And weed out the people that lie to you.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just going to be honest with you.
No, but you're exactly right though. And I think that we underestimate the, you know, especially the negative influences, the people that could just be the energy vampires around the program. And I really think that, you know, you just have to know, like you said, you know, you got to figure out who you can trust and who you can't trust and who is really going to be in your circle. But you know, like you said, Dave, those people in your circle, they got to be your truth tellers. They got to be able, you know, one of the things I had a great assistant coach. I'm really lucky to have a lot of really, really good assistant coaches, but I had two or three really, really good assistant coaches in Jeff Ritz and Sarah Goodwin and Mark Palachek. And they were just truth tellers. We got along great, but when I was going down the right, you know, I was thinking wrong or I was going in the wrong direction on something or I was believing something in the wrong way, you know, especially Jeff would be like, no, that's dumb. Don't do that or change that or whatever it may be. And you have to have somebody not only within that orbit, but, and we're going to talk about assistant coaches and just kind of, you know, transition their coach, you know, it's so important to have an assistant coach like that as well. Don't you think?
Oh. Yeah, I mean, and being an assistant coach is cynical. I mean, we'll talk about that later, but you know, my life, my career as an assistant. Mm-hmm. I haven't been a head coach since 1994.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like you said, you got to have truth teller. Now, and one of the things I see a lot of as I travel around in college is so many of these coaching staffs, like I'm not going to tell you who, but I was at a game a couple of weeks ago and every coach from the head coach on down, you know, and there's so many assistants now, it's crazy, but you know, all the assistants were probably 35 years and younger.
Uh-huh.
And there was, you know, I'm looking around the group, who's the old experienced guy that's going to tell these guys the truth.
Yeah.
And instead of just be a yes man, and it was a good staff. I mean, a good team and everything. But, you know, I think having an older, experienced guy on the staff is really, really helpful. Mm-hmm. And if I were a young coach getting hired for the first time, that's one of the first things I would do.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and like when I hired Jeff and, you know, he had won 470 some games as a head coach and I was a younger coach. I needed somebody like Jeff to help steer me in the right direction. And it was such a wonderful experience with him. And it helped me grow as a coach because, and you're talking to, you know, it kind of comes full circle, right, coach? You know, you have that, when you have that 3 a.m. call, whether you're making the call or receiving the call, it's so important to have somebody who knows what it's like to make and receive that 3 a.m. call and know that perspective of what it's like to be a head coach, because that, as they say, that slide over 18 inches is the biggest 18 inches of a coach's career. Mm-hmm. You were an assistant coach for a long time, Dave. What makes a great assistant coach?
Characteristics, but Let me see if I can kind of get through this. Number one is loyalty.
Mm-hmm.
And loyalty means everything. Being a good assistant coach, I think the second thing is you got to be trustworthy. You know, you have to have good character. You have to have integrity. You have to be competent in your area. That's really important. And what I mean by loyalty is not to the, you know, loyalty to the point where, you know, the head coach has to understand that you're going to be a truth teller.
Mm-hmm.
Work ethic is something that I think is really important when it comes to being an assistant coach. Competency and the, you know, whatever it is, you know, if it's basketball coaching, you're competent in all areas of the game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and in no particular order, you know, you have to be able to be a good teacher. That's really important when it comes to being a good assistant coach. So probably if you look at characteristics, those would be the most important things, you know, loyalty, work ethic, competency in your area, hard work. I mean, everybody works hard pretty much, yep. You know, well, he's a hard worker. Well, yeah, everybody's a hard worker. At almost every level. If you're not, you're going to get weeded out. So those kinds of things, I think, are the really, really important characteristics of a. If any of your listeners are interested, I have a PowerPoint video presentation that I've given to coaches' clinics on how to become an effective assistant coach. And if any of them are interested in that, they can get a hold of me and I'll send it to them.
Mm-hmm.
It just goes through into the weeds on a lot of those things that we kind of just hit off the top.
Yeah. If you're a head coach and you're trying to put together that staff, and again, like, especially like at the high school level, sometimes beggars can't be choosers. I mean, you just gotta, you gotta take everything, you know, we got one person that was willing to help you out. All right. Well, we're just gonna have to make it work with that one guy or gal.
We've all been there, right?
Oh,
high school coach, you know, you need an assistant, you know, you just want somebody that's going to be there every day.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And after that, we'll figure out the rest of it after that. But, you know, in a lot of cases, you know, especially in smaller schools,
mm-hmm.
you know, I remember just taking assistant coaches because he was a teacher at the school and he wanted to do it. And I knew he was going to be there every day.
Yeah. Yeah.
Beyond that,
yeah,
but now as you move up the ranks, obviously you have to have more qualifications than that. But yeah, sometimes it's really hard, especially at a smaller school, a small high school.
Yeah, in a perfect world,
one of the most important things, as assistant coach, hey, I need you to be able to pick the kids up for practice and take them home after practice.
Sure.
Like I worked at a large urban high school. You know, they have cars and all that stuff. And I said, my assistant coach, man, you got to take these kids home and you got to be able to help pick them up, bring them to practice, take them home after practice. That was important.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. Absolutely. Absolutely. Coach, let's move on to the wooden quote of the day. Every week we have a John Wooden quote that I throw out there and we kind of hem and haw over it and chew the fat on it a little bit. So Dave Severance, are you ready for the John Wooden quote of the day? All right. From Wooden, A Lifetime of Observations. This is from page 26. And here is the Wooden quote of the day. Superstars who don't want the responsibility that comes with public acclaim don't have a choice. They are role models, whether they like it or not. They cannot simply announce that they intend to shirk the responsibility. They are role models, either good or bad. So are you. So am I. I believe that we have the obligation to make that model a positive one. Coaches, are you looking for a great sports story to read? Then look no further than Kings of Their Court, the story of three great high school basketball teams in the heartland of America. Millard North, Bellevue West, and Creighton Prep, all out of Omaha, Nebraska, all ranked in the top 25 in the country for the 2020-21 season in the middle of so much chaos that we all lived through. COVID quarantine, politics, racial issues, some of the best players that the city of Omaha has ever produced, and the stories of them, their parents, and their coaches all wrapped up into one here. All you need to do is go to Amazon.com, type in Kings of Their Court, and order yourself a copy today. Coaches, go check out Kings of Their Court.
Well, he's absolutely right.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when it comes to, quote, star players.
Yeah.
Or if you're a, quote, star coach, a high-profile coach, especially, in college or the NBA, you can't shirk that responsibility because you're in the spotlight. And like it or not, you are a role model. I totally agree with Coach Woodland.
How important is it, for all coaches, and most coaches are this way, but you have your isolated situations with it, but giving back what we know. I mean, you do that, I do that. And that's part of being a role model, don't you think?
Those things are all huge, and not to blow my own horn or anything, but that's about 4 or 5 years ago. I started a website, a coaching website, that just to kind of give back to the game.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just 40 years of stuff.
Yep.
I mean, everything that I've tried to put together and give to other coaches, and it's all free, But, we have to be able to, pay it forward and give back to the game. The game has given all of us so much.
Yep.
And me in particular, this game has taken me places I never dreamed that I would be. And so I like to pay that forward, whether it's trying to help younger coaches or, having my website to help coaches, if I can. That's really important.
Yeah.
And at the same time, as you get old like us, you got to continue to grow and to learn. That's why I like, in my job so much is being able to go to the games and the practices and watch the players and watch the coaches. And there are so many great young coaches out there. Not only in the NBA where it's really good, but in college, coaches you've never heard of and probably never will hear of. But some of the best coaches, these small college coaches, and it's really cool to watch them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, your website is awesome. I mean, I've perused it and take a look at it. Oh, yes, there is,
of John Wooden earlier, I've got a 1975 coaching clinic, typed up notes on the old typewriter, John Wooden notes.
Wow.
The clinic, and they're on there.
Mm-hmm.
It's just crazy, all this to Pete Newell and, Tex Winter's original, not original, but copies of his, triple post offense, which we call the triangle.
Yep.
Typed up on a typewriter from his secretary when he's the coach at Long Beach State back in the, 60s.
Wow.
It's all on there.
Yeah. I haven't gotten that deep yet. Our mutual project, I've been been going there first, but it's a lot of stuff. So it's, before I forget, it's Gym Rat, but it's spelled J-Y-M. RATT. So rat, like the metal band from the early 80s going round and round. JYMRATT basketball.com. Coaches, go and check it out. A lot of really, really good stuff that coach has on there. So, coach, what do players need to know? What are some, if you're working with a kid, And just say it's just the average player, if you're just talking to a group of kids, let's say we're at Snow Valley and you're talking to kids, where are you starting at? What are the basics? Where do they need, what are the basic things that you need to know that's going to help make them better players?
Well, the first thing that I think players of all levels need to have is great self-awareness.
Mm-hmm.
They need to know who they are, who they aren't, what they need to work on, what's applicable for them in the system that they're going to play. And all that is being self-aware. Mm-hmm. And it's really hard for young kids. And even, to be honest with you, some NBA players aren't self-aware enough to know, you know, what they're good at, what they're not good at, what they need to work on. But in a 30,000-foot view, that's probably really important. Now, as you get closer and start to look at the player individually, you know, there's a million ways we could go. I think shooting is more important than it's ever been.
Mm-hmm.
That 3-point line the past 20 years has changed our game. So at every level, I think the importance of shooting, not only the fundamentals, the mechanics, all that, but, you know, being self-aware enough to know what's a good shot, bad shot,
mm-hmm. yep.
is really important. Those are important. You know, one of the most important things I think that players today need to learn how to do is play without the ball.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you're not a high usage point guard, you're not going to have the ball, you know, more than, you know, 5 to 10% of the time. So what are you doing when you don't have the ball that's going to help your team? I think it's really important, you know, learning to play off the ball.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's something that we don't do a great job. You know, I travel around, you know, and I watch all these so-called trainers and player development coaches.
Yep. Yep.
And I've seen some great ones and I've seen some questionable ones. But probably 95% of their teaching is done, you know, with the ball in the hands.
Yep. Yep.
And I like I mentioned before, shooting is really important. Now, obviously, you got to have the ball in your hands. But, you know, the other parts of the game, I think, are something that we need to do a better job on.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that answers your question or not, but
no, it just leads to more questions, is what it does, yeah. Dave. which that's why I got you on here. I know you know this, and it comes to a shock to no one that a lot of times players, and especially the parents of players, are not very self-aware of the player's strengths and weaknesses. You know, and their self-awareness is not what it should be. And we'll just leave it at that. You know, how can we, or, you know, how can we help players and parents with the self-awareness that their child or the parent should have with their child?
Yeah. And you know that. That's probably one of the high school coaches' biggest challenges.
Yep,
is the lack of self awareness.
Nope, correct.
They totally get it. Their kids not going to the NBA.
I would even say, Dave, most parents are pretty doggone probably, good. You know.
You know, I have in most cases in everything around our game. I have, you know, it's a 95-5 rule.
Yep.
You know, 95% of the players are great and easy to work with, and 95% of the parents are great and have great self-awareness, but there's going to be that 5% that are going to be a challenge.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the ones we seem to spend our most time.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
It's the biggest challenge that a lot of young coaches, especially high school coaches.
Yep.
Now, when you get to college, it's a little easier, but you're still dealing with the parents.
Mm-hmm.
And you're dealing with now with good college players, you're dealing with agents now because
yep.
of NIL.
Yep.
And all that. And then when when they get to the pro ranks, you're dealing with the agent, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You no longer have to worry about parents and stuff. You have to worry about the agent.
Yep.
So, you know, it all comes back to Marty. You've got to be able to be honest with them.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You got to be honest with the kid. And I think kids today, sometimes because it's so easy to move from one situation to the next, when they hear honest assessments, they leave.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, we probably don't need to get into that because everybody knows what a problem that is. But instead of, you know, figuring out a way to fight through it and improve the situation, they just bail out and they leave.
Yeah. Well,
because they didn't like the truth.
Yeah. Yeah. Last week's guest, Adam Hepker, we had an extended conversation on the ability, you know, it has become harder. And let me ask you this question here. Let's rephrase it. Because this is what Adam and I talked about last week. Has it become, in your opinion, has it become harder to tell certain players the truth? No. Okay. All right. Sure.
It wouldn't be hard.
Yeah. But their reception of the truth.
That's a problem.
Yeah.
It hasn't become harder for us as coaches to tell.
No. Yeah, I worded that poorly. Yeah.
And, you know, it's harder for them to accept it because it is so easy to just move on to the next thing.
Mm-hmm.
That's why when you look at the really successful college teams like nowadays, like look at Marquette, for example.
Yeah.
Those guys got the same team.
Yep.
Those guys just didn't scatter. Mm-hmm. You know, they stuck together. And I believe they might be the only Division I team with no transfers.
Yep.
If I'm not mistaken, one of the few. And, you know, they're able to, you know, stick it out and they've been successful because of it. And a lot of that has to do with their coach, who has an unbelievable culture too.
Yep.
But It's tougher for kids now to accept that they just go to the next thing. Mm-hmm. They don't like what they hear.
Mm-hmm. How do we build that? How do we build that trust? You know, when you were working, you know, obviously a lot of what you've done for most of the 2000s, Dave, has been working with individual players, player development and building relationships and building trust. And you're watching coaching, like you referenced Shaka Smart there. You know, we talked about Kelvin Sampson earlier. How do we build those trustworthy relationships with your players?
There's five things to me that go into building trust. And without trust, you have nothing.
Yep.
I mean, your ultimate goal is to build trust in that relationship with the player. Okay. And, you know, there's certain tenets to that. I think you build up to it. And number one is you got to be honest. Number two is what I call the 24/7 rule. Okay, you got to be there for them. Now we're talking about, you know, player development coaches and assistant coaches that work with players. So 24/7 rule, you got to be totally available 24/7. You have to be competent in your, you know, area, whatever it is, in our case basketball.
Yep.
Right? They have to know that you know what they're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep.
You have to be competent in your area and be an expert in your area.
Mm-hmm.
That's really important. The next thing is, you know, you got to care. And I have a line that I've used since I was a teacher in public schools for 25 years. They don't care how much you know until they know how much you care.
You bet. Yep.
And you got to show them that it's not about you. It's about them. Because as soon as they see, and I've seen this happen, at all levels, as soon as the player sees that you're making it about you, they're out.
Yep.
They don't care. They're out on you. So that's, you know, you got to show them you care. And, you know, then all those things that I've mentioned, you know, that leads to developing trust with a player. And the other thing is you can't bullshit a player. Mm-hmm. They'll smell it a mile away.
Yep. Oh yeah.
You know, if you make it about you and the BS and all that, and they will smell that a mile away. So that's where the honesty comes in, and you know, not being about you. You got to be, you know, whether or not we like it or not, we're the adult in the room. You know, and it can never be about us.
Yep.
And I've seen it where so many times, where it's about the coach. It's about me. It's about my career advancement.
Mm-hmm.
And players will see.
Mm-hmm.
For sure.
Yeah.
So those are the things that are important in developing trust.
Mm-hmm.
And once trust is violated, it can never be regained.
Coaches, are you looking for a way to improve not only your players, but your parents' perspectives on what they should expect when they come to your program at the high school level? Well, A Pen and a Napkin has something for you, your families, your players, your parents, and maybe even yourself as well. Varsity Preparation Academy, the first annual Varsity Preparation Academy, is going to take place May 3rd and 4th, 2025, here in Omaha, Nebraska, at Omaha Marion High School. That's at 7400 Military Avenue here in Omaha. This is for girls basketball players grades 6 through 9 going into the 25-26 school year. VPA is all about educating parents and players to prepare themselves for the varsity sports experience, both on and off the floor. I'm taking all the things that I've learned in my career from all the camps that I've gone to, all the camps that I've worked, all the stuff that I've done on my own here, from USA Basketball to Snow Valley to Point Guard College to the stuff that I've done. And we're combining it all into one really, really intense weekend to help these future varsity athletes get ready for the varsity level. We're going to work on skill sessions on the floor. We're going to have many sessions on the floor talking about important things about the, you know, like why coaches substitute, the importance of routine, different things like that. And then we're going to have classroom sessions where we're going to sit down and talk about different things that are going to be important for the development of the player and the parent. We're also going to have a parent meeting to talk to parents about what to expect in the high school experience, what they should be looking for as their child goes through this. So coaches, pass this on to your players, to your parents. I think it's going to be a really, really good deal. It's $175 for the weekend. That's literally less than $10 an hour that they're going to pay to get this great experience, t-shirts, binders for note-taking, all sorts of different things. Meals are going to be provided. We are going to take care of your players and your parents. A Pen and a Napkin is going to be there to help you out. Always done that, and we're going to do this once again on a different wavelength, on a different level, with the first annual Varsity Preparation Academy, May 3rd and 4th, 2025, here in Omaha, Nebraska. Yeah, no, I think you're right. I mean, what's the old say? You know, trust could take years to build and seconds to destroy, or something along those lines, and that's why I think, you know, one of the things I know I got much better at when I was coaching was just being smart with my, not to say I was perfect, but I got a heck of a lot better at it, being smart with my words, especially like, what?
You hit it right on the head. I mean, words that are so powerful, especially with young kids. You mm-hmm. have to be careful with the words that you choose, especially with those high school and college kids. Because words are really powerful.
Mm-hmm.
And something we say to a player, we may forget by the time we get home, but that player may remember it for the rest of their life. And I've had high school, and I was a young high school coach, and I made so many mistakes. And I have players come up and say, "Coach, remember that time you said such and such to me?" I said, "No, I have no idea." And he said, "This is what," and I couldn't believe it. I said, "I can't believe I said that."
Mm-hmm.
You know, words are so powerful in our profession. You have to be careful about
the word. Yep. Coach, I'd be remiss if I didn't have you on here to not talk about some player development, some of the stuff that you've done. And so let's spend our last few minutes here together talking about that. Skill development, skill drills, different things that you'd like to do, your philosophy of whatever. I mean, I'm just going to shut my mouth and I'm going to let you cook here, Coach. So, you know, kind of let it rip here and just, you know, what were some of the favorite things that you'd like to do?
6 hours on this. Matter of fact, I teach a course on, you know, player development, which is, you know, a 12-hour course, and that's all we do is talk about player development with my students. But, gosh, there's so much that goes into it. And you know, player development is teaching.
Mm-hmm.
That's all it is. It's teaching and trying to get the most that you can get out of that player. And, you know, you got to have a plan.
Yep.
You know, because, you know, if you try to do something without a plan, it's just a dream. So, and you know, I learned by trial and error, from great coaches, you know, Coach Livesey and Coach Locke and you know, Coach Tarkanian, who I worked for, and, you know, probably the best person I was ever around that really helped me kind of develop a philosophy on working with players and skill development was Tim Grover. You know, some of your listeners may or may not know who Tim is, but, you know, he ran a, I guess it was a player development, you know, program in Chicago called Attack Athletics. And I was able to be fortunate enough to work under him and really, really got into the player development and working with players one-on-one and in small groups. Because up until that time, I'd just been either a head high school coach or an assistant in college. But when I kind of got around guys like him and Coach Livesey for an extended period of time, I really got to enjoy the player development side of it. And you know, there's a lot that goes into it, but you got to have a plan. And we go back to the trust thing. You know, when you're working with players individually, you know, that trust thing becomes huge.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. You know, we could get into the weeds with all that goes into to being a good, but it's being a good teacher, it's being a good communicator, it's having a plan. And the other thing is, Marty, consistency.
Yep.
Players want to know that you're the same person every day.
Mm-hmm.
They don't need you to be emotional. They need you to be consistent. Oh, that's huge. They got to know when they come in that gym, you're the same person every day. You're not going to be, you know, up and down with your emotions. You know, you're a high school teacher. You know, how many times, you know, the students come into class and, hey, Mr. Plum, you in a good mood today? I'm the same person every day. I'm consistent. So don't pick up on that eventually.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah.
And as a coach, you know, those players, they've had a million things going on in their life, especially young players. We have no idea the problems they come with when they walk through that door.
Yep.
And we have to be the thing in their life. And it's the same rings true with player development. When those players come in to work out, they know you're going to be organized. You're going to have a plan. You're going to be consistent. You're going to be competent. You're going to be enthusiastic and, you know, organized, all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And all that's really important.
Yep. Two or three key teaching points on the mechanics of shooting.
Oh, yeah. Well, there's so many throughout the years, but, you know, people ask me that a lot. You know, you give a lecture on shooting. I gave a lecture last summer on shooting, and, you know, we went through all the things and everything. But to me, I've really kind of narrowed it down throughout the years. Hand placement on the ball,
mm-hmm.
Okay, I think has become really important. You know, and the younger that the players can understand how important it is, you know, hand placement on the ball, correct the technique with placing your hand on the ball. And then, you know, something as simple as, you know, elbow above the eyebrow on a follow through. If you can't get your elbow above your eyebrow on the release, you know, you're going to be flat. Now, there's a million other things that we can go into: the feet, the legs, the this, the that, the elbow, the under the ball, the eyebrow, all that stuff. But to me, hand placement on the ball and being able to get your elbow above the eyebrow on the release is critical. And I've been really fortunate enough to have conversations and be around some of the best shooting coaches in the world: Dave Hopler,
mm-hmm.
John Townsend, just to name a couple, who are two, you know, acting, both of them have been in the NBA for a long time, and Mike Procopio,
yeah,
guys like that. But to me, that's where it starts. And then, you know, you got all the other stuff. You know, can you shoot off the move? Can you shoot? Like, if you're doing a workout, a shooting workout, I think it should include, you know, shooting off the catch, shooting off the move, shooting off the dribble, free throws, finishing shots.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if I'm going to work out a player and, you know, and design something for that, it's going to include those five things and free throws.
If you're teaching a kid to handle the ball, two or three of the most important dribbles that they need to learn. Is it between the legs? Is it behind the back? Is it, are we just doing simple pullback cross? You know, what are you really teaching there? And again, I know a lot of these things are dependent on the kid, but I'm, you know, just painting with a broad brush, coach.
You know, what's important to me when we teach dribbling?
Talk to me, man.
Can you dribble the ball while being pressured and not lose control of it? Mm-hmm. I mean, it sounds simple, right?
Yep.
Okay, we're going to do all these tricky dribble drills, crossover, in and out, behind the ball. Hey, can you handle the ball and get it from point A to point B against pressure defense without turning it over?
Yeah.
They include a behind the back or a spin dribble to get the ball from point A to point B. But stationary ball handling drills, movement ball handling, like that, that's all good. You know, we've all used that in our player development plans.
Mm-hmm.
You know, dribbling off, you know, off the move, dribbling stationary. But until you put that defender in front, you're not, now you really test it. Okay, can you get the ball from here to here against pressure defense without turning it over?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And so much of our ball handling is done, you know, with no defense.
Yep.
You should put a guy out in front of him. Now can you do it?
Yeah. Yeah. Or, you know, I loved using the football pads and popping people and, you know, different. Yeah. 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 Absolutely.
You know, fouling them, you know, hitting them on the arm, all that stuff's great, you know, and, you know, can you, you know, I've seen guys who look great in those dribbling drills, and then you put pressure on them in a game and they can't get the ball off the court.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. If you can't practically apply what you're being taught with this, that, and the other thing, then it doesn't matter, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I've seen workouts, you know, with, and parents are paying these trainers exorbitant amounts of money to do all these crazy drills.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, when's that going to happen?
Yep.
You know, oh, but the parents love it because it looks cool, you know?
Yep.
He's on Instagram and he does. Hey, is that going to fly?
Yep. Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's like knowing physics, but you can't balance your checkbook.
Which I...
How much time, broadly, you know, again, painting with a broad brush, coach, how much time, what percentage of practice should you be working on just skill work if you're the average coach?
30%, 33%.
Okay.
Like, 33% individual skills, you know, a third team offense, a third team defense.
Gotcha.
Or 20% individual, 20% team offense, 20% team defense, you know, 40% special situations.
Gotcha.
You know, that's, we're talking about like high school, college, and NBA is totally different. That's a different animal because you don't practice. It's most of the practice time in the NBA is spent on individual stuff.
Yeah.
You know, guys getting their individual work on because you can't do a whole lot of team stuff because of the games.
Yep.
Like people would be shocked to learn how little NBA teams practice.
Mm-hmm.
And anytime that they do go what we call live, you know,
live, yep.
Man, if it goes more than 20 minutes during the season, that's exceptional.
Yeah. Yeah. And a lot of times you see coaches experimenting in games with different things because of the lack of the practice time, right? Yep. Yep. Dave Severance, right now with the Indiana Pacers.
Hey, by the way, great organization. I'm I'm having a lot of fun, and I work with some really, really great people.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you're in the heartland. You're in the Midwest, so, you know.
I'm not. I'm in
the head. I'm saying the organization is based out of the Midwest. That's what I meant, Coach. Yeah, you get to.
Stuff. It's great people, and I love it. You know, my relationship to Indianapolis goes back to the early 90s when Nike used to have this thing called an All-America Camp.
Yep. Yep.
Run by George Raveling, which was probably one of the best experiences I've ever had in my life, being associated with the Nike All-American Camp, where, you know, me and guys like Tate and Herb were out the college counselors.
Yep.
And it was awesome.
Awesome. So anyway. Awesome. Dave Severance, basketball lifer, great teacher of the game. Check out his website. I'm doing my thing, but I keep trying to take 10 minutes to poke a little here, poke a little there. And Coach has so many good things on his website. I want to thank him for his time today. Coach, you know, I hope you had a good time on a pen and a napkin.
No, it's great, Marty. And if any of your listeners want to reach out to me and just connect and talk hoop, my email's on the website, and reach out anytime.
Yep. And that website again, one last time here, Gym Rat Basketball, but Jim, it's JYMRATT basketball.com. It's been great having Coach on here. Coach, if you could hold the line here, I just got a couple of things I got to wrap up here. Again, Dave Severance, Indiana Pacers, been with the Bulls, been with the Clippers, done a lot of great things, worked with some great, great people. It's great to have his perspective. His hoop of the day, it's so cool. I mean, just seeing the things that Coach puts out. So if you're not subscribed to that, if you're not following that, you need to get on that right now. We want to thank COSAC Chiropractic for their support of the podcast, our founding sponsors. Without them, there is no a pen and a napkin. So if you're in the Omaha area, check out Dr. Kevin, Dr. Heidi. Follow us on Twitter at a pen and a napkin. Download, rate, review this. Give us 5 stars. Subscribe to the pod. Questions, comments, suggestions, or ideas, email me at penandanapkin@gmail.com. Coaches, as always, let's be sure to hone our craft one day at a time.